So you've come here for the truth. Well, we've got the truth and nothing but the truth. Here are your hosts, Robert A. Bianchi and David J. Bruno.
Welcome to WMQR Radio. It's nothing but the truth with your host, Bob Bianchi, Dave Bruno, two attorneys talking about mindset, Dave. It's crazy.
And we have a third today.
A third what?
A third lawyer.
Okay. Yeah. Like two wasn't enough.
I know.
You were building a mighty nation.
Exactly. Yeah. Today we have Jonah Perlin, Professor Jonah Perlin from Georgetown Law Center. He also has his own podcast, How I Lawyer podcast. Jonah was a civil litigator before he started at the Law Center, and also has some impeccable clerkships to drive some experience with, and that is the U.S. District Court of District Columbia, as well as the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. And for our audience that doesn't know, that's in the federal system with these complex civil litigation cases. That's probably why you went into that. And Bob, you'll like this because we have a lot to talk about this. At Georgetown Law, he teaches legal practice and advanced legal writing, which is pretty much the exact opposite of our skill set, which are trial lawyers in the courtroom. We like to go in and knock them out with cross-examinations and make riveting closing arguments. And it's always great to have a legal research and writer on the team, which we do full time. She was 33 years at the appellate division in New Jersey. Recently nice. Retired and is like our air support here at the Bianchi Law Group with her skill set to complement our team of former prosecutors. So welcome, Jonah.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate you inviting me on.
Yeah, for sure. And also, we have to add, there's a little Jersey flavor here, right? So mm-hmm. This is a graduate of magna cum laude from Princeton University. So probably not too shy on the academic background. It seems like he's got a lot there. What do you think?
Did you miss that he's a professor?
No.
Just one of the best law schools in the country. Yeah, so we definitely have intelligence on the show today.
So professor,
that's very kind, gentlemen. Let's we'll have a good time too. That's going to be even more fun.
Yeah, definitely. So tell us about the podcast. Tell us about your background. The show is about mindset. You have impeccable and obviously, excellent credentials that have been recognized, by many people. So why is it that, or how did you get to where you are and what is it that mm-hmm. you do?
Sure. So the podcast, came out of the pandemic, like so many other podcasts and so many other personal projects. So just to sort of set the scene, right? I have two young daughters. At that point, they're 2 years old and 4 years old. My wife and I are both working full time. She's also an attorney. And I'm at Georgetown at this point, and I have all these law students who come to me and say, Professor, how am I going to learn how to be a lawyer, or what kind of law do I want to practice if I'm in my mom's basement while I'm a 1L, right? That's an incredible challenge, a once-in-a-generation challenge. And at the same time, I'm looking for a way to connect outside of sort of my academic writing and my teaching. And I had this idea of starting a podcast where I could interview lawyers about what they do, why they do it, and how they do it well, kind of your classic coffee date, if you will, right? Asynchronously and at scale for my students and anybody else out there who was interested in hearing lawyer stories. And so that's how the podcast starts. And at that point, I say, I'm going to do 50 episodes in my first year. That was an incredibly audacious goal. Some might call audacious, another word for audacious in this context, being a stupid goal, right? 50 episodes. I had no idea how to podcast, but I had this vision and I said, I'm going to do it. And I did it, and I'm still going 3.5 years later. And I've had 135 episodes that have been downloaded just shy of 275,000 times. You'd never believe that many people want to listen to lawyer stories. But I'm a big believer that one way we learn about ourselves and who we want to be as people and as professionals is by learning the stories of others. And so that's kind of the core approach that I take with How I Lawyer.
There's so many, I know Dave kind of gave me like a little nudge because there's so many things in terms of the education space with lawyers that we're involved in. But I've always found, especially in the area of criminal law, but I don't think it's just necessarily criminal, that being a lawyer, you're on the cutting edge of human nature. I mean, people love to listen to lawyer stories because they're interesting stories that you can kind of view a little bit about yourself from the outside without getting hurt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're so right. I mean, I think we forget sometimes that law is about people's stories, right? You referenced my clerkships. I clerked for, was then Chief Judge of the Second Circuit, Robert Katzman, incredibly respected jurist who unfortunately passed away a few years ago. And one thing he taught me when I was clerking was that people who were in his courtroom, that was often the worst day of their life or the most stressful day of their life. And he wanted to make sure that they left with a positive experience with the judiciary, even if they lost. And that was such an important part of what it means to be a lawyer, is it's really about people's stories and about how we deal with each other in society, criminal or otherwise. And so I couldn't agree more.
Wow, amazing, Professor. In fact, we have a lot of law students and college students that follow us.
Sure.
Before COVID, we had a workshop for students at local colleges in New Jersey. And we since have made that virtual too. So in the fall, another upcoming course that's coming up.
Fantastic.
I can appreciate this. You know, so you're in the classroom with these students. You're providing value in these podcasts. I wonder to you, what are some of the big challenges that law school students have in today's age right now that want to be lawyers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question for anybody who cares about the future of our profession, which I think, you know, I count myself in that group, and I'm sure you both count yourself in that group as well. You know, one of the big challenges, this is my sixth year of full-time teaching. Before that, I was an adjunct, and before that, I was a student in the same classroom that I now teach in, which I think is, you know, gives me a little bit of perspective. One of the big challenges today is just the quantity of information available to humans is incredible, right? And it's only increasing every single day. And with generative AI coming down the pike, it's only going to keep increasing. And I think one of the challenges is finding the signal in the noise. And that's true for people looking for jobs, right? I mean, you know, you talk to lawyers who pick jobs in ages past, they had no idea what lawyers did. They sort of fell into the first job they had. Now we have all this information, but how do you collate it? How do you understand it? How do you deal with it when you're swiping up and down on TikTok or on Twitter or whatever we're calling Twitter these days? So I think just the quantity of information makes it harder to be a law student, and it's harder to figure out what kind of law you want to practice. And so it's helping students learn that critical skill of information management and understanding where that signal is. That's the thing I work on so much with my students, both on the writing side, but also on the career side.
Sure. With all this information, what are some of the tips that you give your students and others listening about how to conquer these challenges?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is you have to really focus on what your information diet is, right? What you take in is really, really important. And so one of the great parts, I think, about learning to be a lawyer today is that it's much more transparent. You go on LinkedIn, right? And you can learn about what you all do as criminal lawyers in New Jersey, or what a corporate lawyer in Chicago is doing who does bankruptcy, or what an immigration lawyer out in California is doing. You can learn all about that, but you have to carefully collate what information you're taking in, because there's only so much time and so much energy. So I think it's, you know, the classic phrase, like garbage in, garbage out. Quality in, quality out. And I think that's true for reading also. I mean, I have students come to me and say, how can I become a better legal writer, professor? And I said, it's not just by writing any brief you find on the internet, right? You need to be reading high quality writing from people you respect. And that's, you know, again, trying to find that signal in the noise.
Sure. I love that concept of focusing on the information. But professor, what about time management? Personally, I believe that a lot of time is being wasted in other activities, other things, other distractions, when we should be focusing on more of that positive consumption. Thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, that's another real challenge is time, right? So the quantity of information goes up and your time stays the same. And so it's how you spend that time. And look, I would add in, I think our students now are being inundated by so much from lawyers, from law firms, from everyone trying to market to them, that they forget that sometimes the person who's going to help them find their niche or their path is the classmate sitting right next to them, or the professor who's in front of them in the class that they have to sit in. So I think you're right. I think it's about, how much time am I going to be spending on this? And what am I going to be taking in? And if you cut down on the sources, make those high quality sources, you can get through them in the same amount of time. And so I think you're absolutely right. Time and quantity go hand in glove.
Now, Jonah, you just brought up LinkedIn, and I'm glad you did, because that's where we connected. That is where we connected. I saw your content. I love what you're doing, the value you're putting out. And I think that every law student, every college student, any professional for that matter, should be on LinkedIn, because that is the network. We all need to be supporting each other. Thoughts in it, because I see you're on LinkedIn. Talk a little bit about the platform before our first break.
Sure. I'm a huge fan of LinkedIn because it's a professional network where people can share about the profession. And I'm a big believer that if the more we demystify, the more we who are practicing share, right, the more opportunity we have to show the next generation the realm of the possible. And so this is sort of like a, you know, it's not like TikTok. It's not like Twitter, where I got my start in social media. That was my first real social media platform, where there's so much noise. The professional nature of LinkedIn, I think, is a real game changer. And for me, I think we're telling all of our students, you have to be on there, right? That's sort of like table stakes. Everybody has to have their resume on there. And so it's a great opportunity to find connections. And, you know, the real trick to LinkedIn is when you can find people who you want to connect with, and there's a platform for doing it. I think it's a really powerful network.
Absolutely. Well said. That's our first part. It goes quick. That's Nothing But the Truth with your host, Bob Bianchi and Dave Bruno. We'll see you after the break.
At the Bianchi Law Group, our team of former prosecutors and certified criminal trial attorneys specialize in criminal defense and domestic violence cases. When you need a law firm with courage, compassion, and the commitment to fight for you, call the Bianchi Law Group today.
Yeah. Okay, well, welcome back to WMTR Radio, Nothing But the Truth. Professor, I just recently went through an academic experience. I challenged myself to do something that was extremely intense. And I found myself as being the oldest student in the classroom with a bunch of younger folks who, let's say it's been a while since I've had a test, and not so for them.
Right.
But the point that you were raising before, something that struck me was the dedication they had. I was expecting to see less dedication. I didn't, thankfully. But to the point that you're raising, unlike when I took the same skills years ago, there's a never ending source and flood of information that they can get from outside sources. And at a certain point in time, I found myself being overwhelmed with information because I was turning that fire hose on as well. And I had to find a way to say, look, this is enough right here. I got to stop. Because it's never ending with AI, like you said, put it into ChatGPT, you could go on and on. Do you see students needing to learn how to stop studying, if you will?
Great question. So I'll answer it like any good law professor should, which is yes and no, right? So on the one hand, I think that law students are facing the same thing, frankly, that you felt in that class, where the fire hose is never ending. And it's very hard to know when to turn it off. I mean, that's one of the classic questions we get as professors, right? Is when can I stop studying? When can I stop researching? And that's something, as those of us who have been in the practice a little while know, is something you gain over time through experience and wisdom. You sort of know when you've hit the outer edge of just enough. And that's what you're really looking for. And that's still a challenge. The other thing I'll add, though, or on the other hand, is these students are typically digital natives. Not only are they digital natives, many of our law students now are Generation Z. So we as law pro, I'm a what they call a geriatric millennial, right? I'm just one of the oldest millennials out there. These Generation Z grew up with all of this. Now, that doesn't mean they have better skills at it. It just means that they're used to it. And so I think what I'm always trying to teach, and this is frankly a core skill that I think has been taught to lawyers since the beginning of American legal education, is always be focused on what is your purpose, whether that's in a document or getting information, why am I getting this information, and who is your audience for what you're going to produce, right? So as New Jersey trial lawyers, you know, you're not going to spend a lot of time researching trial law from Utah. Right. You know that because that's what you do. It's essentially irrelevant in probably 99.9% of the cases that you all do. And teaching students how to do that, how to say, this may be helpful to someone, but it is not helpful to my purpose and my audience today, is one of those keystone skills that you need to have in a world with unlimited information.
Yeah, I found some who were working very, very hard. But because time is limited and information, no matter how bountiful it is finite in terms of your ability to be able to absorb it and understand it, spread themselves too thin. And so they weren't able to master any part of the, you know, 9 modules of the course that we went through, and
right.
some of them were unsuccessful because of that. Not that they were not smart, not that they weren't putting the time in. They just weren't putting the time in the right spaces.
Yeah, that's really a challenge. That's a challenge for new legal writers, right? That's the group I mostly work with, but I think it's a challenge for all of us, is understanding that we have the ability to go deep into any topic from our smartphone, right? From the pickup line at our kids' daycare. But just because we can go deep everywhere doesn't mean we should. So spend a lot of time on the front end asking, what question am I trying to answer and for whom am I trying to answer it? Because if you don't limit the universe, there is no natural limit. So the classic example that I think of when I teach legal research is, traditionally, if you had to do legal research in books, right? You were limited by what books your library had and how quickly you could get those books off the shelf. Now I can do all of that research from my smartphone. And if I just type in, I don't know, pick any topic, contract law interpretation, right? If I type that in, I'm going to get 10,000 cases. The answer is, don't read all 10,000 of those cases. It's ask a better question.
Interesting.
Yeah. Wow. And you know, it's been brought up a couple times already, and I'm just going to hit it now. Artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
I mean, as lawyers, we have to deal with it, either misuse of it or helpful AI. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine, as a professor, specifically a professor of legal writing, having mm-hmm. to deal with this new resource that's available to students and lawyers. Thoughts, professor, on how we deal with this new tool?
Yeah, I mean, I like the way you're framing it. It is a tool, right? If you think about it, lawyers have, this is the idea that there are new technological tools is nothing new for the legal profession, right? Imagine practicing law without a computer, without email, without the internet, without a phone, without a fax. For those that don't remember faxes, that was a way to send documents before email, right? We've faced these challenges before, but each challenge presents its own nuances. And I think generative AI is going to be particularly helpful to lawyers because lawyers track in the written and spoken word. And that's where generative AI sort of has the most capabilities to create new words, right? And new word patterns that haven't been seen before. And so I think we're going to have to change as technology changes. Our profession's going to have to change. There's no question. How I teach legal writing is going to have to change. But the core skills of how we argue like a lawyer, whether it's a closing argument like one that you're giving, or an academic article like the one I'm writing, or a first year memo like the one I'm having my students writing, that's all based on analysis and rhetoric that goes back thousands of years. And if you don't know how to do those core skills to understand where an argument flows and why an argument's compelling or otherwise, no amount of generative AI is going to help you. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I guess it's maybe somewhat in the area of what you're saying. Again, get back to that course. So some people are just using AI to get the answers to questions. And some of us were using AI, and I'd say, you know, I know the answer to this, but I can't remember. And we figured out that AI was answering about 80% correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other 20% would either be close or a little bit off or not exactly what we were looking for. The ones who tended to do better with the AI used it to refresh their recollection and said, oh yeah, there's the answer. But they knew when the pieces were wrong, whereas the other people who didn't do the studying didn't know the difference between the right or wrongness of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the writing process will change based on the tools we have available to us, right? I did not learn how to write sort of before there was a computer. Computers were sort of commonplace when I was learning how to write in the first instance. So I'm a computer native when it comes to writing. But if you learned how to write longhand or you learned how to write by typewriter, the process changed with the word processor. The process is now going to change. And I think you're absolutely right. The skill that is going to be prized in the next age of generative AI is going to be the ability to edit and work with sort of 60% good text, mm-hmm. right? And the ability to do that is something we're going to have to learn how to teach our students to help them when they get into the real world. But that's something we're learning alongside them right now. And so, you know, I have a feeling that my daughters who are in elementary school are going to be better at it than I am at some point. And so I need to stay abreast of what's going on and try to find ways to give my students the opportunity to practice, because it's just going to change the process. It's not going to change the product.
Another hot topic in the law is attorney wellness. With nowadays, with all the information, all the responsibilities, attorneys are feeling overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. They're feeling stressed. They're dealing with other people's problems that are bleeding into their own lives. Professor, thoughts speaking not only to the students, but also to the legal community about dealing with attorney wellness.
Yeah, I mean, attorney wellness is the biggest challenge I think our profession faces. I mean, you know, AI is how we do our job. Attorney wellness is whether we're able to do our job. It starts in law school. I mean, the wellness challenges that our lawyers are facing do not magically appear the day you pass the bar exam. They exist in the practices and the approaches to mental health, to community responsibility, to understanding where we fit in the universe and when to ask and how to ask for help, that start in, you know, when you're kids and all the way till you become lawyers. And so I think one thing that we can do and we're trying to do is integrate that into the legal curriculum. That can come in the form of sort of specific classes. That could come in the form of how we talk to our students. So something as simple as I used to take pride in answering every email, even if it was in the middle of the night, because that's what I did as a junior associate. And now when I answer an email in the middle of the night, I make sure to tell the law student that I don't expect them to be doing that or reading that. It just so happens that's when it's convenient for me. And so we have to model good behaviors from day one. And we have to remind people that just because we may have done things differently when we were junior attorneys, that's not a good enough reason to keep doing them the same way. And so I think attorney wellness is a hard topic. There's always a balance. This is a high stress, high stakes profession. I mean, that's where we started our whole conversation, is that these are the most important stories that people have to tell. And we are entrusted with those stories as lawyers and for our clients. But that doesn't mean we can't worry about putting our mask on first when the plane is having turbulence. And so I think we have to train that in students from day one. And it's hard, and we just have to keep trying.
I don't think there's any better way to end this show, Dave. That was a perfect analogy, perfect example, and a very, very important point. You listen to WMTR Radio, It's All About the Truth. Bob Bianchi, Dave Bruno. Dave, where can they find the professor and the wisdom that has been brought down today?
Well, for Nothing But the Truth, Professor, can you please tell the audience where they could find you?
Absolutely. So my podcast is at howilawyer.com, howilawyer.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm also on LinkedIn, on Twitter. I'm out there. And if you really want to read some academic articles, you can find me just by Googling Jonah Perlin and going to my Georgetown website. But I really appreciate you guys taking the time to invite me on.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you. And for anybody that wants to see this video live, You know, we're doing it on Saturday mornings, not this video, but everyone thereafter. And also, nothingbutthetruthpodcast.com is the website where it has all the guest videos, including Professor. Thank you again for coming on Nothing But The Truth. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
We're the Bianchi Law Group, a team of former prosecutors and certified criminal trial attorneys.
But here's the thing. He put himself in a box when he said my
relied on by CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, Law and Crime, and news leaders across the country for our criminal defense expertise.
In a search warrant, you have to have probable cause that a crime's been committed and there's evidence in a particular place.
When you need a law firm with courage, compassion, and the commitment to fight for you, call the Bianchi Law Group today.